Hello, beautiful. And what I'd really like to know is, what's good in your life today? I'm Kia, and this is another episode of the Female Veterans Podcast. Today, I have with me a very special Marine veteran. I love Marine female veterans. I cannot say that enough. I love Marine female veterans, maybe because one of them was a mentor of mine in my high school years, but I do absolutely love Marine female veterans, especially, as you know, as a Navy sailor, we love our Marines. So I have with me Victoria Givens, and I am so excited because she has found something so special to share with you about how she heals. And that's part of what this podcast is about. It's not just about sharing stories. It's about us helping each other, being sisters to each other, and helping us hold each other up and heal and share all the good things and the bad things that happened during our military experience. And well, that's pretty healing in and of itself. So with that, I want to welcome you, Victoria.
Why, thank you, Kia. I greatly appreciate the fact that you reached out and let me talk about me.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. You know, and before we dive right into the questions, because that's what we're going to do, I want to give a shout out to Her Hair RX. My friend Tia creates custom pieces for women who are suffering with hair problems. Now, if you have Gulf War syndrome, you may also have alopecia. And if you do, and you struggle with your hair, then please go visit at Her Hair RX. Tell her Kia sent you and let her hook you up. It is covered by your veterans benefits, and you may not even know that. So I'm going to have Tia come on soon, and we're going to do a little bit of an info for you. But I just want to shout her out because I love the work that she's doing. And now let's get back into it. I want to know exactly what made you join the military, Victoria.
I have to say, my father and homelessness made me join the military.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll give you a little bit of background on that. So I am dyslexic, but you know, back in the day, people really didn't know what dyslexia was. So everybody thought that I was trying not in school. You know, that nobody saw me studying late at night. They always thought, you know, that I was just being bashed and arrogant, but that was a mask. And my father was telling everybody that if this kid doesn't get up and do something after she graduates, I'm going to kick her out of the house. And my mom was saying that, you know, take your time. You have until December. So I went back and forth and back and forth with that. And I felt like I was causing strife in my parents' marriage. So I was either going to be homeless or join the military. The only problem with that was, is that I only knew one person that was in the military, and he was obviously in the Marine Corps. So that's how the Marine Corps came to be in my life.
My goodness. I mean, that's a tough situation. Both of my sons have dyslexia and they require accommodations for school. And I think it's really sad when children don't receive the support that they need, because it doesn't mean that you're not bright. It just means that you view things a little bit differently than other people, and it makes it a little harder. It makes me really sad that your father was just going to throw you out of the house like that, too.
Well, I was challenging. I'll be honest.
There it is.
Definitely a challenging soul. I definitely will say that. But I also look at it this way. If I had not gone that route, I wouldn't be who I am today. So there's a good and bad side to everything.
For sure. So you knew one person, that person was a Marine, and you went and signed up. What was boot camp like for you?
Oh, Lord. It was interesting. I did gymnastics in high school, so I thought I really understood what a team player was. It's a very disciplined sport, so I thought I was very disciplined in that sense. Or was it an eye-opener? Let me go back a little bit. So I don't look as young as I am. I'm in my 60s. So I went in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. So back then, yes, back then, female Marines didn't, when they went to boot camp, didn't have weapons. It was all about poison etiquette. So,
Hold up. Okay, first of all, I'm gagged at your age because you look like a child. Okay, number one. Number two, are you telling me it was about poise and etiquette for women Marines? Because I can't even get my mind around that. Was it like etiquette class? Be a Marine. Have good manners.
It was manners, hair, makeup, how you carried yourself.
Well, I would have joined the Marines then.
Oh, no, you didn't.
No, tell me, girl, what happened?
So, you know, and I was a tomboy at heart. And so, you know, when the recruiter recruited me in, I didn't have that in my brain set. I was like, I'm going to fire a weapon. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I get there and they're like, girl, you got to do something with your hair, you know? And I was like, oh, because I had a little short fro and that was not acceptable back then. So, you know, I had to learn how to do my hair. I never put on makeup. I had to learn how to put on makeup. It was about how you ate, how you looked, Marine Corps history. You know, you're going to have me hide underneath my table. But that's what boot camp was like. But it was still very much that hardcore mentality. Even though, you know, we didn't go to the field when I first went in. It was a 1.5-mile run. It later changed to 3 miles. We didn't have to go to the rifle range. And then we went to the rifle range. So, but the attitude was that we were here to support the men in case we had another war. That was the attitude back in the 70s and early 80s. But in 85, that all changed. But boot camp was about be on your mark, be disciplined, be on time, no messing around. So they were very much, you need to carry yourself as a lady at all times and do not forget that you are a Marine first and a woman second, but they made those two worlds merge.
Wow. I wonder who created that curriculum. I'm going to have to Google that. That's wild. Now, I know it was kind of like that in most of the branches where that women were different. And I remember I did another interview. I've done so many now, but I did another interview and she was like telling me about how they had to wear these skirts. And for PT, they were in like these, they were dressed in like these ladies, you know, they weren't wearing workout gear. It was like a skirt or something that they had to wear.
Oh no, I don't go that far back.
Oh my gosh. But I mean, when you think of the history of women in the military, you don't really think about it as we're learning manners and etiquette and how to be a lady, but represent this branch of the service. Yes. It's just so interesting to think that that's, and then you said that's what it was like for you. And then up until 1985.
Around 1985, they started sending us to the rifle range. They started integrating us. I had never really been to the field until then. So we started going to the field. We start doing 25-mile hikes, humps, marches, whatever you want to call them. So I had to transition. And in between all that, I had two kids. So I had to transition and keep up with the men. So it was challenging. It definitely was. It was challenging. I feel like I'm blowing your mind here.
I am a little bit mind blown because I'm like, what it is I'm trying to think about being in your position, right? And you're coming from, hey, put on makeup. You didn't wear makeup. Now they got you wearing makeup. They got you doing your hair different. You know, you thought you were going to shoot guns. Now you're being a lady, a classy lady, you know, in of the uniform. And then the next thing you know, they're like, okay, guess what? You're going to the range. You're going to shoot. And you have to transition then from being this expectation of being this refined military woman to support the men who are off, you know, doing war activities in the field. And now you're in the field.
Right. And you also have to think about not only did my mindset had to change, the men's mindset had to change too. You know, so because when I joined my first unit, I was the only female in there.
Oh, wow.
I was the only female in my unit. So when you think about that, it's like I'm looking up like, what am I supposed to do with all this?
Was it scary?
It was really scary. You know, I really have to say I spent a lot of my time on my P's and Q's. I always had somebody asking me out didn't matter which color they were. I always had somebody asking me out. So you never know if somebody was being sincere, if somebody was trying to bait you into something, right. You know, and there's no parental guidance there. There's no parental guidance. You go from work to the barracks. And I was, my first duty station was Camp Pendleton. Mm-hmm. And I was out in the boondocks with the grunts. And for people who don't know what grunts are, the infantry. So there's maybe like, I think 15 females. And then I don't know how many males were out there. And, you know, your mindset, you know, you could go either one or another way, but your mindset is so like, do I need to be careful? Do I need to watch what I do? Watch who I talk to? Watch what I say? And as I say that, there are certain people who are distinctly in my brain, because I remember that when I first got to my first duties that I felt very alone. And one of my warrant officers, and I knew he was married, had asked me to babysit. And I was like, oh, wait, great. A way to get off the base and watch a little regular TV and he can go out with his wife and, you know, I can assimilate a little bit. I said yes. And that was a big mistake because his intent was trying to do something that, and when I had the conversation with my platoon sergeant the next day, they kind of all swept that underneath the carpet. So I felt very alone.
Okay. So I have to ask the question.
Ask it.
Was this gentleman who, or let's say not gentleman, who invited you out, was his intention to take advantage of you?
Yes. Yes, it was. That was his intent. The command knew that he was like that.
So and, he was a problem child already.
And, you know, when you think officers, everybody wants to respect them. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, learned throughout my career that just because you have a bar on your shoulder doesn't mean that your brain is well. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, how do you go back to work when this person, and thank God his wife came home. I think he thought his wife was going to be out later. And his wife came home because he was like kind of like chasing me around his apartment trying to get a kiss. And I just was like, I came here to babysit. I didn't come here to do anything else. And, you know, I learned that my naivety was going to be my worst enemy.
Thank God nothing worse happened, because you know how many times that the conversation is assault on this podcast?
Well, I will tell you, there's been several cases of assault with me.
Oh my God.
But, you know, I'm going to skim over it a little bit, but I also look at it this way. Turning things around, I could either live in those assaults and live with what the Marine Corps did or didn't do, or I can move on. And I've chosen to move on. And that being said, I've also had a good Marine Corps career. And that was one of the things I said, with the bad, there's good that can come out of it. There's good that really can come out of it. But I'll give you a list of some of my assignments if you want to know. I was a career planner. I got to be one of the first women to drive a tank before they even let women drive tanks. I got to be a career planner. I got to be a Toys for Tots advisor. I've gotten to get out of the country when, you know, no one in my family got out of the country. I was the first female in my family to join the military. You know, my husband will tell you, my last Marine Corps assignment was one of the best assignments I had. I had mad respect. I had mad respect for my first sergeant. And I got to do things I never got to do. I would have never been able to do. I've got to give people their final burials. Even though hanging in a cemetery can be a little traumatizing, I've got to do some final salutes. I've got to give that flag to family members where not everybody's going to get to do that. So I've gotten to hang out at Giant Stadium. I've gotten to meet a couple of celebrities. Not gonna throw their names out there. But if I hadn't have made that choice, I wouldn't have had those experiences. Now, it doesn't mean that I forget about the bad experiences. I just choose to go a different route.
You know, it's interesting that you said that you choose to go a different route, because the word that you use there is choice. And I don't often mention it on this podcast, but I do a lot of coaching, right? And oftentimes that's something that I work with my clients about, is the choice, because we can choose. We can choose to do the healing work, or we can choose to sit in that for as long as we choose to sit in it. We can choose to become bitter and angry and shut down and close people out, or we can choose to come out of that and turn around and try to help other people. On this very podcast, I had a guest who was assaulted multiple times. She worked in the security office, meaning she was a policeman. And she now runs a not-for-profit helping dogs and veterans connect, right? But she was assaulted more than once, and she stayed in the military. And I remember I asked her, why did you stay in? Why did you choose that? And she said, because she wanted to be able to help the young women coming up behind her. And that's what she stayed to do. And that was also a choice, right? You can choose to help others. You can choose to heal. And you chose to go forward and, you know, focus on the good things, which is my favorite thing to do. So it doesn't mean bad things don't happen, right? But we choose.
Bad things happen in life. I mean, we have to look at, and this is something I've had to come reconcile with. It's taken me many years to get to the point where I was in therapy and I could start to begin healing. I've been blessed with two children. My son is one of the top cybersecurity guys in the country.
Wow.
Yes. And my husband, who won't come on camera, is definitely been a part of that. But with trauma, we bring that trauma to our families. And my children are learning how to heal. At our ages, we're learning how to heal. But that being said, you know, I stayed because I was raising two kids as a single parent. That was my choice to stay. I put up with the nonsense because of that reason. But I got to a point where I couldn't do it anymore. I got out in 92, got to deal with the civilian world, which was very interesting. Nobody prepares you for that. And just before 9/11, I left 13 years on the table, and I did not want to leave that. I really wanted to finish my career. I felt I had a little bit more to give. And that's where I learned where most of the major changes in the Marine Corps came. And I was like, oh my goodness, I don't know if my body can handle this. We had to do hand-to-hand combat. We had to run 3 miles. And in my mind, I was running a mile and a half and just, you know, keeping myself in shape. My last command was the Golf Company, 25th Marines. And it was an amazing assignment, amazing assignment. You know, drama still went on, but I got to see the side of the Marine Corps that a lot of people had talked about. And this is where I said, toys for tots, funeral, platoon sergeant, training, operations. I had a lot on my shoulders and I was proud to carry that. But I also realized that I no longer, because of all the change in time, I no longer felt like I fit the Marine Corps build, as they say. And I made the choice to go in the National Guard, which was interesting, and thinking that, you know, military is military, that I'm going to respect, you know, people are going to respect my rank and I'm going to respect their rank. National Guard is a little different. There are some great, fantastic units. There were units that when I was coming home from Iraq that wanted me, but I also realized what Iraq taught me and what the National Guard taught me, how broken I was, and that I needed help. And that's when my journey began. I came home a hot mess. My husband said to me, you either get help or it's over, you know. And I give him praise for that. You know, for a spouse to sit there and look at you and say, you either do one or the other, you know, speaks to where they're at too. They're willing to walk that ride with you, but you have to be willing to make that change. And that's where my choice really began. That's where the journey really began. I'm still in therapy, but my therapy has changed over the years. And as you were saying, choice, I make that choice each and every day I get up to do something, to get something major done, so I can have a healthier lifestyle. My granddaughter can have a healthier lifestyle. My children see the example that I'm not this person that just constantly blow up, that I'm this person that's willing to listen, willing to understand, and willing to give advice. We all have to make that choice, and you have to determine what or why you want to make that choice.
That's really powerful. I'm interested in the transition from the Marines into the National Guard. I'm curious about what you were saying about the change, like the adjustment coming from the Marines and then going in there. And were the issues, so this is a two-part question, were the issues that you were having when you mentioned blowing up, did that affect you career-wise as well as at home?
Both. It did affect me career-wise. Coming from the Marine Corps, you're always training at the next level. What I learned at the National Guard, people were very stagnant. They didn't understand that, you know, coming from the area that I came from, that even though I was an E6, I was operating at an E7, E8 level. You know, and that's why I brought up operations and training, that we didn't stop until the job was done. It wasn't a 9-to-5 job. And when my unit got called up, a lot of people were not ready to go to war. They liked the paycheck, don't get me wrong, but they were not ready to really answer the call. And whatever that call may look like or whatever that call may be, they weren't ready for that. And I used to get called arrogant, the B word, because I just was completely different. And when I say different is that I was very military. You know, boots shined, you look good, you made sure everything was on point. You know, when you said 6 o'clock, what I really mean is 5:45 in the morning, you know, stuff like that. And I remember I had a sergeant come up to me and they said, when we get over there, we're going to hook up, right? And I looked at them and said, what do you mean by hook up? And some of the other differences are, in the Marine Corps, an E6 is a staff NCO. In the Army, an E6 is an NCO. So I had to transition from being here to being down here. And that was very difficult for me to do. My commanding officer saw that I was different, that I was definitely running at a higher level than everybody else. They did put me in positions of authority. The only problem was is that I didn't have the backing to go with it. So when I would make a decision, I would go to the first sergeant and I say, well, can I do this? They would say yes. But as soon as somebody cried or complained about it, they would be like, Givens, I'm going to write you up. And I'd be like, what?
How are you getting written up for that?
Because I was the one who put the ink down to the pen. And they were not used to, I think they were not used to, first of all, being African-American, an African-American woman being in charge. And I'm sorry to say that, but that was the reality of the situation. And they weren't used to a E6 telling them, hey, we need to get this done or we need to get that done. Or not understanding because of the positions I had in the Marine Corps, that I had connections because I was still in New Jersey. I had connections and I could make things happen. And they were very much not used to that. And I firmly believe my word was my bond. So what the National Guard kind of did to me was they took the security blanket from underneath my feet that the Marine Corps had given me. And they kind of just threw it in my face. I learned that I could not trust anybody. I became a whole different other person. When we went home on weekends, I spent most of my time crying, telling my spouse I didn't think I was going to come home. I later found out that some of my female were plotting to, I'm trying to think of a good word, to destroy my career would be a better word to use. And, you know, when you go into an environment like that and coming from an environment where people respected you and their word was their bond, and then going into an environment where you don't know who's really telling the truth, it's just difficult. And the hardest thing for me was just, I became very two-faced. I became this whole other entity because that's how I learned how to survive in the National Guard. I had to put on one face to do one thing and another face to do something else. And I hate to use that word two-faced, but that is just, you know, all the bad things that happened to me in the Marine Corps, and then on top going to Iraq with a command where things were just crazy. It just, like, I always say that everything happened just kind of exploded in that particular unit. It just, everything that I kept in and held dear that nobody knew about just all exploded out in Iraq. And I became a whole different other, in another sense, I'll say animal.
That would not be the first time I've heard that, if that's not surprising to you.
Because I don't really hang around a lot of females. And you know, I'm not going to say that it's a female thing, but I haven't had, there's only like a handful of females that know that I've kind of had that experience that I've had.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I did not deploy. So it's not a personal experience to me, but I talk to so many veterans, men and women, but, you know, I record these female veteran interviews. And what I understand about going, especially to the Middle East, could be anywhere overseas, but especially to the Middle East, and maybe it's because we've done it so much since the 90s, is that people change over there. And some people become monstrous. And some people react to that environment by having to change. I think when you're in an abusive relationship, right? I have to liken it to being in an abusive relationship. But when you're in an abusive relationship, there's something called reactive abuse, right? Okay. And so the way I think of it is like, some people go over there and they have to react to the change of sanity, put it that way. And so they have to adopt maybe a dual persona. You call it maybe two-faced, but like a dual persona in order to survive in that environment. It'd be like going, just getting dropped down in the wild, wild west. You got to figure out how to survive. Maybe that means you can't be a soft, warm, kind, sweet person, right? No, you got to become a whole different kind of animal. And so I kind of understand where you're coming from and deeply empathize with the fact that you had to experience that.
And, you know, I think for me, the fact that I had to bring that home, I'm learning to let go of that guilt, but having to bring that home, because, you know, you don't just leave it there. It comes with you. That monster comes home with you. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand, is that, you know, war really changes people. I don't know what it is. People who you might think were your best friend, all of a sudden are not your friend. People you think that you would never connect with, you end up being very close to. But for me, it just was destructive, that knowing that even before we left for Iraq, the unit I was going with was ate up before we even left for Iraq, and that I had to go there with them. I just became a different animal, you know. And when I say animal, I mean that in, I'll give you a prime example. One of the comments that I made was that doesn't matter which branch of service you're in, you respect the rank. And there was a shipment that was supposed to come in several days later, and it came on one particular day, and I had given my command all the information. And I said, hey, if you need this to happen, this is what I need so I can get my guy, the civilian guy, to come over and get this done. So I happen to wake up, and all of a sudden I see all this convoy rolling, and I have this E7 come up and go, hey, I need to get this offloaded now because we got to get the convoy going. And I said, what are you talking about? So he starts barking in my face, and I was like, you're in my area of operation. I don't know what you do back over there, but you're in my area of operation. And I don't control the civilians. I ask the civilians if they can come. Well, you need to. And I said, no. I said, you need to get me an officer because I need to call the talk. So his lieutenant comes in and all my troops are looking and they're like, oh, crap. And I can see them splitting up because they know where I'm going. And I just start barking at this lieutenant. And I says, matter of fact, I'm going to call Major Dilly. And yes, the guy's name is Major Dilly. If you want to change it, that's fine. I don't know if he's dead or alive, but that was the guy's name. And I ate him for breakfast. And my girlfriend's in the, she was E5. And my girlfriend's over in the corner going, Givens, please don't. You're going to get busted. I said, no, I'm not. She was like, you're going to get busted. I said, no, I'm not. So when I got down and I said, one thing you don't know about me, I know everybody's dirty business. I said, so if I go down, they're all going down with me. They're all going down with me. I kept a journal. The smartest thing I did and the smartest thing
A4
taught us was to always take notes. So that way you know that your assignment is correct. I always took notes. And the lieutenant's looking at me and I said, you can go back and you can tell my captain what I said, what I did. Here's my name. Here's my rank. And tell him, yes, I said that. And she looked at me like, and it's not that I'm really proud of that moment, but I wanted people to understand that I was angry and I was tired and I just wasn't taking it anymore. I just wasn't taking it anymore because at the end of the day, lives are also at stake. And, you know, the one thing I will say that I loved about Iraq was that the units that came there with nothing, I ran supply. If I had extra stuff, I gave it to them. I would say, give me a list. And I just didn't let things sit on the ground. I just said, let me go through my extras and see what I got. Everybody would give me a list and I would go down and break it down and just made sure everybody had what they need. And to me, that was the most important thing. And that was the one thing I held on to that helped me get back home. That I'm not here for me. We're here to help each other. No matter how angry I got or how nasty I got, at the end of the day, that's what we were here for. And, you know, it's really sad, too, that there was a captain and a lieutenant that was killed by an E6 over there. And, you know, I remember when that incident happened, I was like, why? You know, and that could have easily been me who had done it. They pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed that you push people into something that they wouldn't even think about doing.
Wow. I mean, it happens a lot, doesn't it? Accidents happen and our own turn on each other sometimes. And it's just like you said, it's like war makes you into something different and pushes you to places that you never really would have gone.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yes, it does. And I'm at a good place to where I can talk about that stuff now. It used to be, I would even say early 2020, I would start talking about it and I'd start boo-hooing. But, you know, I have a really, really great therapist and he keeps plants in his office. And I used to sit there and just rub on the little plant, poor plant. I probably rubbed a leaf off to, but I used to rub on his plants. And I used to say to him, I don't know why you got these plants, but I do like, and I would just literally, like it was like a palm leaf. And I would just go in the office and talk and rub on it. And sometimes I would rub a little too hard, but I would rub on it. And he said, you know, you're not the only person who does that. He says, I keep these plants because everybody kind of just goes to them. You know, so I've been blessed in many other ways. And I can honestly say, you know, as I said before, and I probably will say it again and again, that if I didn't have those bad experiences, I wouldn't have these good experiences either.
That's really wise. I'm curious about your transition now, because we were talking about how you came back and you were angry and your husband gave you that ultimatum. And the beautiful energy of him being willing to go down the path of healing with you, but in loving you enough and the family enough to say, hey, look, you need this help. You get it or we're out of here. Yeah, I know that was part of your transition back.
Yeah. So that was like 2006, 2007. I did have a suicide attempt and I've been in and out of therapy. I did the MST program at the VA here. I went through like 6 therapists, 2 psychiatrists. And I just kept pushing and chugging along because I wanted my marriage to work. And it wasn't easy. We did kind of like split, like I did an in-house split for a little bit of a time. And he was working on himself too. He was going to a therapist too. Because when I started realizing how my actions, even though I didn't mean them, were affecting him too and giving him kind of like a secondary PTSD. I just wanted to make things better. Whether they worked or not, I wanted to make things better so that we all could be healthy because it affected my children too. And the transition basically was spending some in and out time in some psych hospitals. Those are interesting, by the way. America's got a lot to work on when it comes to that stuff. Just finding the right therapist and the right psychiatrist, I think, has been, and I've weaned off a lot of different medications because at one time I was on eight different psych meds. And I think that was the VA's cure-all. But I think what happens with that is you spend a lot of time just being lethargic. And it also messes with, if you look at some of the medications, it can give you high cholesterol, diabetes, all sorts of metabolic syndromes. And I'm not going to say that I do or I don't have those, but those are some of the end results of that medication. And one of the things was when I walked away for a little bit and decided that I needed to stop and really think. And that was in 2012. I just stopped for a little bit. And I started looking for other organizations that were helping veterans. And that was my road back. I would honestly say 2012 was my road back because, one, my granddaughter was born and I wanted to be the healthiest version of a Mimi that I could be. And I didn't ever want her to see that side that I just didn't want her to see that. And to this day, she hasn't. She knows that I have a temper because she's seen it come out once or twice. But she's never seen that side of me that my children have seen. And I hope she never sees that side. To my dying breath, I hope she never sees that side because I think it has helped my daughter and it's given me a second chance as a mother. Because I always tease with my daughter, I said, we co-parent her. Because she does, I mean, she's here every weekend. So I said, we co-parent, you know, even though we co-parent because she can talk to me where my kids couldn't talk to me. They didn't know, you know, how to respond to me. She can talk to me. You know, she does have outlets and that's not always the case. That is not always the case. And I know at the end of the day, when we talk about transition, when I look at her face, I know if I don't take care of me and I don't follow my little regiment, that I don't want her to do what others have done to others in the past. And when I say that, around the pandemic, a good friend of mine's son killed himself. And knowing what suicide can do to a person keeps me going to the next. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I don't think we talk about the consequences and what a person who's left behind, what they're left with, what those consequences are for them. You know, it truly is an eye-opening experience. Truly.
That's really powerful. I think we sometimes talk about survivor's guilt, but we don't really talk about the grief from a person who has left us like that.
I still think about it. Yeah, I think about this. This person wasn't a service member, but he was a good friend of my son's. And I talked to him that October and I said, if you need anything, you call me right away. He was in a bad spot. And I said, you need anything, you call me right away. And my son said, you know, make sure you call my mom, because everybody calls me Mama G. Make sure you call my mom. And I get this phone call. My son's in tears on the phone. And he said, Mom, do you know what happened with so-and-so? And I said, no, I would have heard about that. So I said, let me do some research. I'll call you right back. And I typed in his name. And I was like, that's how I found out. By doing a Google search. And my son found out because his mom posted a thing on Facebook. So I found out all the details and I just was torn. I just was torn, you know. And when we talk about people's past and recovery and how you get from point A to point B, and me talking about being blessed on the level of those things that happen and, you know, how I've transitioned, you know, I often say, why couldn't I help him transition in the way that I did? You know, I often say that. And that's a little bit of the guilt that I carry with me. But on the other side of the coin, why didn't he reach out? Why didn't he reach out? You know, I thought I gave him the tools to reach out, but I know what it feels like to be on both sides of the fence. And that's what keeps me going and keeps me here today, knowing what, you know, and a lot of people don't get that experience.
It's deep. It's deep. And you're right. A lot of people don't understand what it's like to, you know, consider like to have suicidal ideation and also to lose someone to suicide.
They don't.
It's really sad. And then the impact on everyone around you when you're suffering in that way. I mean, I know they're always talking about the 22 a day, which we know is way more than that, right? And there's just never enough that's done, I think. But there's also, for those of us that survive that, that see that, you know, another veteran has taken their life. I think it was just before the pandemic. There was like maybe 2019 or 2020. No, it had to be like maybe 2018, 2019. I remember I kept seeing on Twitter, the old Twitter, when there would be like another news article that said a veteran was taking their life in front of VA centers. And I remember being so angry one day and just, this is all kind of what led me to this podcast, by the way. I actually ended up looking up statistics. And that's when I found out at that time that the female veteran suicide rate was 250% higher than civilian women's. Not 10, not 20, not even 50. 250%. I said, I've got to do something because you get enraged. And I was so angry that day. And I said, when is anyone going to notice that this keeps happening and these people are sending a message? When are they going to get the message? And I just remember feeling really, really angry and sad and guilty. And I didn't even know them.
I just think being a female service member, because we can relate, we can understand, everybody's situation, circumstances is different. But you can relate and you say to yourself, why didn't I see that? Or why didn't I understand that? Or why didn't I know they were hurting? You know, the VA still has a long way to go. They have a long way to go. And I have my little knack of instead of complaining about what the VA doesn't do or does do, when I see something, I use Instagram. When I see something, I use Instagram, I notify the VA, I let them know which VA I was at, approximately what time, and I post it. And I say, you can do something about this. And I will tell you, the downside to that is I don't hide myself from that. I've been getting phone calls. Could you please call me the next time instead of posting it? I said, listen, I could post it. I just send a message and pictures. And I said, it's not my job to check the bathrooms, but if I use a bathroom that is disgusting, I'm going to take video and I'm going to take pictures. Or if I see something inappropriate, I'm going to hide the veteran, but I'm going to let people know what's going on. And that's just my little way of saying, you know what? I see you. This is what I'm going to do about it. You know, and it gives me a little bit of peace. At least I'm, you know, I don't expect the world to change or the VA to change by that. But at least I know that that little bit of peace is making a little bit of change. You know, we can all make little changes. We all can.
Beautifully said. I love that. So now that you had spent time out of the military and you've been working on your therapy, I know we talked a little bit before about something really special that helped you. You were mentioning touching the plants in your therapist's office. Is that, I know that you love gardening and you post about it on Instagram. Is that what led you down to that pathway of healing?
So ironically, my husband and I bought a house and my girlfriend gave me a plant. For a housewarming gift. And I was like, a plant? Why? I was like, why should she give me a plant? You know, like, because you don't realize at the time. I was like, why should she give me a plant? So I said, well, I got to take care of this thing. I said, if I let it die and she comes over here, she's going to kill me. You know, mentally speaking, she's going to kill me. So, but this plant produced so many tomatoes. She gave me a tomato plant and an herb plant. And it produced so many tomatoes. I think she gave me a cucumber plant too. And I had it in the front of my porch. And I was like, oh, okay. So the next year, I was like, you know what? COVID started. I had my granddaughter at the house trying to find an activity for her to do. And I said, why don't we grow some plants as a science project? You know, because they're sitting in front of the cameras. You know, I wanted her to be interactive. So she helped me start the garden. And we did it on the front. It was a little bitty garden at the time. And we noticed that some of the plants needed to go in the back. So the next year was still kind of in a, at least New Jersey was in still kind of a lockdown state. I said, I'm going to Home Depot and I'm just going to do this garden thing. And I found that just having something to nurture, watching it grow, developed, it was like having another baby without the cramps or the cramps. And it's just taken off from there. It gets bigger and better. I keep saying, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. But I find myself when January hits, the bug kicks in. I start ordering my supplies. I probably drive my husband crazy. I've got this bay window that I get great sunlight in. I got a plant warmer in there. I'm getting ready to set up. I've got my distiller going on. I start everything out with distilled water. I my babies get the best. And if you want me to send you some pictures, I'll send you some pictures, but they're on Instagram. But I've grown watermelon, cucumbers, tomatoes, carrots, eggplants. I had 11 different tomato plants last year.
Wow, that's incredible.
And I firmly believe in the Bible. I'm not trying to go there, but I believe when you have an abundance, you spread that abundance. So I gave to 11 different families. And let me tell you, the joy that knowing that I helped put something on somebody's table, you know, it's not that, oh, I did this type of thing. It was, I grew that. I had my neighbor, you know, telling me, Vicky, so you growing some eggplants this year? Because, you know, eggplant Parmesan. You know, I gave to my church members. They show me pictures of what they do, you know. And it's, I wish I could explain it, but when I'm out there talking to my plants, I have full-blown conversations. You know, oh, you're not doing well. Oh, baby, you got a little bug? Let me take that bug. Let me wipe it off. You know, it's about that nurturing, you know, and us women, we are nurturers. About that nurturing. When you see something from a seed and it becomes this big, you know, plant. And my girlfriend, which I call her children, my grandbabies, she got a plant at school and she says, Mimi, it's not thriving. And I says, well, let's put it in a pot. So we put it in a pot. And then the next thing I know, I was like, Abigail, you got to come over. We got to put it in another pot. And the next, we called it Seymour. So if you know Seymour was taking over a bush with all its cucumbers. You know, before I knew it, I had a cucumber like this long. And I say it every year, but I find every year I'm drawn right back to it. And it is, I just had my husband bring dirt out in the backyard to get it ready, to get things going. And I learned most of what I've learned from YouTube, because what else do you do during COVID? A lot of people hate. I wanted to be out of the house. And that is the one thing that, so here's the thing. If I feel like I need to isolate, my garden says, I need water. I need nourishment. I need trimming. You know, I need the fruits, you know, and I love going out in the backyard, grabbing a strawberry, rinsing it off with water and popping it in my mouth. The same thing with the tomatoes, you know, the cucumbers and the rest of them, you know, I even grew collards, mustard, kale, you know,
whole farm back there.
It's really not a farm, but I have my section to where it loves me for who I am. And it's taught me to love. I put a post out a couple of weeks ago and I said, the biggest gift I gave myself was learning to love me. And that's what my plants did for me. It helped me love me for me. You know, I love all the love that I have, but loving oneself is the biggest gift you can give anybody. Super. Because it shines through. And I, you know, I don't know if you can see it in me, but it shines through when you love yourself. When you love yourself, let me tell you, that is the best gift you can give anybody because it radiates from you.
So all I can say is super true. It's so true. It's so true. Oh my gosh. What a powerful and beautiful story you have. I think it's incredible what you're doing. And I know we talked a little bit also before we started recording about something that doesn't surprise me, your goal to help other veterans learn how to garden. And something that I've noticed throughout your story is that you have, and a lot of us who have served, have this innate drive to help other people, to take care of others, to make sure everybody has their supplies, to make sure other people enjoy the fruits of your labor, to share your abundance. Like, and I think part of loving yourself and being fulfilled is having the ability to understand your purpose. And we get a lot of meaning and purpose from helping other people and from serving others. And so it does not surprise me any little bit that the next step for you would be sharing your knowledge with other veterans because it helped you heal. So maybe it will help them heal.
Yeah, it's funny. So I'm going to jump back into the Marine Corps a minute. The reserves have this thing called peacetime wartime support team. And basically what it was meant to do was to help families connect and make sure they have everything they need when their, you know, family members goes overseas or whatever the case may be. And I feel that's what gardening does for me. It takes just a little bit of effort and a little bit of love. And you'll be surprised, you know, what happens when you first see a plant just growing, its leaves just popping up out of the soil when you put that seed down, you get excited about that. And like some people may think I'm crazy. That's fine. You can think that. But let me tell you, the joy it brings when you know that you're the one who planted that seed, who put it in the ground or transplant it and watch it blossom into a full-blown plant. You know, when you get Mr. Groundhog who wants to try and take over and eat the fruits of your labor. I have an antidote for that. I have a schnoodle. She's part schnauzer and part poodle. I think that's what we think she is. But she's a small little dog, but let some animal come in that yard. She's not an attacker, but she will let you know. And she takes care of my garden. So she's looking forward to gardening seasoning too. So you know, my end goal is I love to give that knowledge to somebody else. And my therapist and I have been talking about that. And he's like, well, you know, you could write it down. You could, you know, express. And I said, I would like to do it in a group setting. And hopefully maybe this year when, you know, now that things are starting to come back a little bit to normal, that is one thing people might want to do. You know, that is my hope anyway. I'm not going to push it on anybody, but if anybody wants to learn how to do it, it's really easy. It's just a matter of putting the time and love into it. And that's what I do. That is what I do, to be honest. I just put my time and love into it. And maybe because I look at it as a deposit, I know I'm going to lose some plants, but I look forward to the plants that just thrive. And that is what I look forward to. You know, life, death is part of life, but life is so abundant around us. And that's the one positive message I can leave everybody with.
Life is so
around us and it's such an abundance of it. You just have to look.
I am so inspired by you. I often am, every single story touches me. But I love this inspirational message that you've had. It's been, obviously you went through a lot of trauma. And you had to battle through a lot of healing. And it's rough. But you're doing it.
I want to say one thing to you. I owe you an apology.
And do? I don't think,
yes, I do.
Oh.
You had asked me to be the podcast before.
I remember. 2020?
Yeah, I kept dodging you.
Was that what was happening?
I'll be honest. I'll be honest. I was dodging you. And when you reached out again, I looked up and I said, now's the time. Because my story had changed. It had changed drastically. My story had changed. And, you know, we all know when it is time. And I want to thank you again for reaching out and be willing to take a chance on me and to tell my story, because I love the end of the book, you know, or it's a new chapter.
A new chapter. That's or the part two.
Thank you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it is my pleasure. And I will tell you that I believe in something called divine timing. And everybody that is meant to be on this podcast finds their way on this podcast. There have been guests that said no. There have been guests who just disappeared into the wind. But everyone who's meant to be on this podcast and be part of this beautiful sisterhood and this family that is the Female Veterans Podcast makes their way here. And I am honored and humbled by the opportunity to bring these stories to the world. So thank you actually for being a guest, but I am getting ahead of myself because I have one last question for you.
Shoot.
And you have given just dropping pearls and pearls and pearls of great advice during this entire podcast. But I am going to ask you if there was just one piece, like the most important piece of advice that you could share for your veteran sisters coming up behind you, what would it be?
I think I already said it. Love yourself. Love yourself. It took me, I am going to be 64 this year. And it took me to 62 to just love myself. Just love yourself. Give yourself grace. Those are the two best things I can tell you. And giving yourself grace allows you to be free. And when I say grace, I mean, it's okay that bad things happen. It's what we do with those things that makes us us. To be honest, I could easily be wallowing in my sorrow. You know, you would never know it right now. I have a cold, not feeling well. But I said today, I said, no matter what happens, I'm doing this podcast and I'm going to do me. And, you know, that also comes from knowing that you gave me another chance, that you knew that this was the right timing. I knew it was the right timing. And I wanted to talk my story. And like I said, my story has changed. And the reason why it's changed is because I love myself and gave myself grace on things that happen. It's giving you peace. It gives you the peace. I loving oneself is the best thing you can do for yourself. I don't care what anybody says.
It's the truth. I mean, there's always amazing advice on this podcast, but at the heart of it all, without the loving yourself, all of the rest of it is more difficult to accomplish. It's easier. And I know, because I'm right there with you, sister. Like I am 48 years old. Okay. And
talk about age. You don't even look yours.
I know, but you look younger than me. So stop it. But the thing is like, it took me so long to get there. You know, it took me so long. I had a rough upbringing. I went into the military, had a rough experience there, not as rough as some. So I do count my blessings, but it was rough for me and rough afterwards. And it took me some time to get my footing in this life. But when that self-love, when I finally started to understand that concept, and I started to feel that shift inside myself too, it changed everything for me. Everything. So I really appreciate you. And I thank you so much for that advice. It is good advice. And maybe even the best advice. But I really want to thank you for coming to this podcast, the Female Veterans Podcast. This is my baby. And I appreciate you coming here and sharing your story with everyone, because you do never know when your story is someone else's survival guide, and your gardening and everything you're doing to heal can truly help people.
And I tell you, there's been times when I've listened to the podcast out in the garden, underneath the gazebo, just, and it's like this, you know, I can listen to somebody else's story and say, girl, you go, sister. You know, I can listen with grace and understanding and non-judgment and say, this is her story. This is her time. This is her place. And, you know, leave it for that and still be a whole circle. It affects me in a way, but it does not affect me. You know, I can say, wow, I love what she did, you know. So I hope my story does the same for somebody else in their garden too, whatever their garden may look like.
I know it will. And who knows, maybe it might be someone you help them learn how to garden, right? Well, so tell me where we can follow along your journey. I know you're on Instagram. What's your Instagram?
I'm on Instagram, and it's so funny. I am at 8501_Victoria. And if you want to know, it's me right now. There is a winter tree underneath there. We got that bad winter storm, and all I could think about was spring.
I bet.
So.
And that groundhog and let us know that spring is coming early. So they say, so I'm so excited for you to get out in your garden and bring life to the world.
I'm excited to see what spring has hold for me because I cannot wait to get all that crabgrass out of my garden.
I bet. I need to take a page out of your book and start gardening. I have 4 houseplants. These are the first houseplants I've kept alive for the longest. So fingers crossed, I can raise kids and I can take care of pets. But I've been killing plants most of my life. So I'm trying. I don't give up, though. I keep trying to grow some plants. I believe that this year is the year I will grow these babies bigger. It's time to repot them. And I'm so scared.
Talk to them first.
I will do that. I will.
Talk to them first. I talk to them all the time. And I know some are going to survive and some not. But I do talk to them all the time. You know, hey, mom's getting ready to put you in another plant. We're going in another bed. I'm going to put you over here. And trust me, I do talk to them. Like, it sounds funny, but I don't know if they hear me or not, or feel me or not, but the love comes through. And that's what I think. I talk to them in kind of a baby talk, but I think they know it's sincere. You know, I feel bad when I got to cut a limb off or prune. You know, but I said, I need you to grow. So I got to do this. So it's like cutting nails. Like, you know, when you got to cut your little baby's nails. If you saw me back there, you'd be like, oh my God, this woman is crazy.
Well, you know what they say? I think it was, there was a scientific study the scientist did where he spoke to water. They put positive energy into water and it made these beautiful crystals, right? And then they said, terrible things like you're stupid, you're ugly, like set all this awful stuff to water and it turned like gray and brown and nasty. By the way, we're made up mostly of water. So careful what you're telling yourself, by the way.
Yes.
Side note, but imagine it's all energy. It's plants. I'm sure your plants feel that beautiful, magical energy. If it can happen to water, what you're doing to your plants is just speaking life into them, which is amazing, right? That's my opinion. My humble opinion anyway.
It's like raising children, but I'm doing it better with, I do my plants better not do my children.
Well, I'm sure they would disagree. I'm sure your children would disagree. But anyways, I am so thankful for you for being a guest. This is where we wrap it up. I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate your time and your candor, your sincerity, your vulnerability, and your advice. It's been an amazing time. And thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me. You have a great day.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming on this journey with me. I appreciate all of you so, so much. Remember to check out Her Hair RX. She will walk you through the entire experience of how to get a custom piece just for you. It's like a wig or a hair piece or a unit, whatever you want to call it. But if you're struggling with alopecia or any hair problem, she's there to support you. And a lot of female veterans do not know that you are able to do this. Right. And, or let's just say it's, you know, you can get it, but who you can get it from is not for your hair. please reach out to her, HairRx. Find her on Instagram, or you can direct message me at the Female Veterans Podcast on Instagram. I am on YouTube now. I just started a YouTube channel. You can see all or hear all the episodes on YouTube now. So please go support that. And I did my first live interview a couple of weeks ago. So I am going to start adding in live interviews on YouTube of the Female Veterans Podcast. And I hope that you'll come on that journey with me as well. So that's the female. Yeah, definitely do that. And so the Female Veterans Podcast on YouTube, follow me on Instagram, you know, go to thefemaleveteranspodcast.com if you want to share your story. I promise I am doing a newsletter. I just hired staff and I'm getting them all trained and acclimated because I'm trying to grow you guys. So your love and support helps me do that. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you next time.